we're going to ask the question, is your cell phone giving you cancer? We'll have Joel Moskowitz from UC Berkeley on to help us take a look at a new film called Mobilize. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert. Our topic this segment, is your cell phone killing you? Maybe more importantly, what could it be doing to your kid? That is the question explored by a new film making its Bay Area debut this weekend in San Francisco called Mobilize. Here's a clip.
When my 8-month-old grandson showed that he was really smart with a phone, I began to get curious about what we knew about cell phones, and what I found really concerned me. I learned that other countries, namely Israel and England, had already issued warnings that children should not even use cell phones. Then I began to do research on this about 7 years ago. The brain of a child absorbs twice as much radiation as an adult. That's a stunning fact. Few people are aware of it. And we are marketing phones and pushing advertising with E-Trade babies talking into cell phones and children running businesses with little phones as though they're benign devices.
That's best-selling author and award-winning epidemiologist Deborah Davis in the new film, Mobilize. We're joined now by one of the film's producers, Joel Moskowitz. He's director of the Center for Family and Community Health at UC Berkeley and co-producer of the new film, which looks at the health effects of mobile phone radiation. Welcome.
Thanks a lot.
What is the state of evidence on health effects from mobile phones?
It's quite substantial. We have quite a few decades of research demonstrating a variety of biologic effects ranging from stress proteins, micronuclei, free radicals, DNA damage, genetic damage, to human studies showing evidence of increased cancer risk, particularly brain cancer and other tumors in the head, and also some evidence showing increased breast cancer risk from women who wear cell phones in their bras periodically. Besides the cancer risk, the movie Mobilize focuses primarily on the cancer risk. It also mentions the risk to sperm that are exposed to cell phone radiation from men keeping phones in their pocket, and some evidence of increased male infertility. Besides those risks, there are also increasing evidence of reproductive health risks from exposure, prenatal exposure to cell phone radiation. That often shows up in terms of increased risk of ADHD in humans. In laboratory animals, it looks like memory and learning deficits, although one of the researchers has also described it as essentially ADHD in mice. In terms of children's use, we're finding increased evidence of headaches, migraines, hearing loss, and ADHD as well.
So you've just rattled off a terrifying list of conditions. If I, as a layperson, go through the studies that are out there, though, they look very inconclusive. The biggest study that was done on the connection to cancer, which called the Interphone study, involved data from 13 countries. It was released in 2011. Said it couldn't show a connection between cancer and cell phone use.
One has to take into account that many of those researchers are funded in large part by industry. In fact, the Interphone study was partly funded by industry. In some countries, it was completely funded by industry. The Interphone investigators, and it was a very large team because it was a 13-nation study, broke down into essentially three groups. One group who felt there was sufficient evidence, and one has to go basically to the second appendix, which is available online only, of the paper, and one finds pretty compelling evidence of not only of increased brain cancer risk, essentially an 80% increase among those heavier users, but also a dose-response relationship with brain cancer for years of use. Another group was in denial and basically said, oh, no, this can't possibly be this effect that they reported in the main body, which was an increased brain cancer risk among the heavier cell phone users, because we're not seeing it yet in the tumor registries. And then a third group thought they messed up the study so badly it shouldn't even be published. But this was a major, major study that the World Health Organization funded, so the WHO required the study to be published. Since that study's been published, we've had a couple more major studies, one by a group of researchers in Sweden who've looked at effects over 25 years of use, after 25 years of use, and found a threefold increase of brain cancer among those who've used cordless or wireless phones. They also found a fourfold increase in tumor on the nerve from the ear to the brain among people who've used cell phones or cordless phones for 20 years or more. We've also had a French case control study which showed close to a threefold risk of brain cancer among those who've used cell phones for 10 or more years. So we're getting increasing evidence from case control studies. We're getting more evidence from some of the cohort studies, which weren't particularly designed to look at cell phone use, but had measures of that showing evidence of increased brain cancer. It's very probable that wireless phone use, cordless phone, and cell phone use is at very least a contributor to brain cancer, if not a direct cause of it.
So what would the mechanism be? People, when we cover this, we generally get one or two letters with someone from a physics background pointing out that cell phone radiation is not powerful enough to be ionizing radiation, right? The conventional wisdom is it does not have the properties necessary to scramble genes, which is what we would normally think would cause cancer.
Well, ionizing essentially means the ability to strip electrons, but it works in different ways. And in particular, it's not the amount of energy or even the particular frequency of the carrier wave that appears to be the problem. It's the information, the modulation of that wave that seems to be interfering with our biology on a very basic level. And that's why these laboratory studies, these cellular studies, are showing development of free radicals or reactive oxygen species, micronuclei, creation of stress proteins by the cells. So there's this whole host of biologic effects that are occurring that are precursors, including single and double-strand DNA damage has been demonstrated in numerous studies. Some of the early studies, interestingly, were conducted by the Environmental Protection Agency. And when the EPA started calling for much more stringent regulation, at the time the FCC was about to adopt the regulations, the Congress cut off the funding for the EPA. And so the EPA has not been able to do any more research on wireless radiation since the 90s. Interestingly, I've been discovering government documents, U.S. Air Force reports, Defense Intelligence Agency's reports dating back to the 70s and 80s, reviews of the literature, and the early research was large on low-intensity microwave radiation, which is what we're talking about here with Wi-Fi or cellular or cordless phones or these wireless baby monitors or smart meters. The early research was largely funded by the military,
because they were looking at military-grade communications equipment, radar installations.
Yeah, and they were also looking to develop weaponry, ways to disable people on the battlefield using microwave radiation. So there was multiple reasons why the military was concerned, and they had a lot of technicians who were exposed to varying levels, radar technicians, because this is came out of the radar research. So basically, as early as the 70s and the 80s, in these government reviews of the research, they were pointing out that this low-intensity microwave radiation is biologically active and is indeed harmful to humans, or at least potentially harmful to humans, and needs to be controlled. But all of this information was ignored when the industry developed standards that the FCC later adopted in 1996, which is when our current cell phone regulations were adopted and the testing procedures were adopted.
The FCC is not an agency of health professionals. How did they wind up in charge of regulating cell phones for their health impacts?
Because they are a communication, they regulate communications, and the industry essentially controls this commission. What was set up was an interagency working group consisting of approximately half a dozen health agencies that were supposed to advise the FCC, but these agencies were not given any funding or any real mandate to do research on this issue. So they've basically been sitting on their hands. And in fact, they've been accused of that in a submission by the city attorneys of Boston and Philadelphia of being negligent, essentially. Pass the buck attitude the federal agencies have had on this issue since the 90s. So the regulations were adopted when hardly anyone was using cell phones. Now everyone has cell phones, virtually every adult, and soon almost every child over the age of 12 will have a cell phone. In addition, we're exposing children to Wi-Fi in every public school in the country, or will soon be, thanks to an initiative coming out of the White House. Pretty soon you will not have an option to have a landline, a hardwired connection, to get telephone communications, because AT&T wants to get out of the landline business. So there will be no option. There will be no going back once we destroy all the wired connections. in the schools and in our homes. The industry doesn't want to have to support wire. It's too expensive. They'd rather do everything wirelessly.
We're speaking with Joel Moskowitz. He's director of the Center for Family and Community Health at UC Berkeley, co-producer of a new film called Mobilize, which looks at the health effects of cell phone radiation. And it's having its Bay Area debut this weekend. On Friday, it'll be at the Ream Theater in Moraga at 1 p.m. On Saturday, it will be at the Castro Theater in San Francisco, also at 1 p.m. And there'll be a Q&A after each screening. Most of the focus has been on whether or not cell phones cause cancer. If we are worried about cancer, how intense an effect is it? I mean, there's risk and then there's risk. I do things like not getting enough sleep that increase my risk for cancer. But unfortunately, it doesn't mean I get a full night's sleep every night.
The problem with brain cancer is a very, very serious cancer. If you get it or a loved one gets it, it has a very serious impact because the fatality rate is very, very high. And even if you survive it, it's often disabling. The other potential risks from a public health standpoint from wireless radiation exposure may actually amount to a much bigger impact on society. Many people, the estimates are generally somewhere in the order of 3% of people already are developing what's called electromagnetic hypersensitivity, essentially a set of allergic conditions that manifest themselves in different ways in different people after cumulative exposures to wireless radiation from cell phones and other devices. And these can be quite disabling, too, for a small fraction of these people, essentially forcing them to move to areas where there's very little wireless communication going on.
What would that sensitivity look like? How would it manifest?
It often manifests in terms of severe headaches, fatigue, insomnia, sometimes skin conditions, sometimes cardiac reactivity, variable heartbeats. So it can have a major impact on people's lives. And the concern is that with increasing exposures to background microwave radiation from cellular towers and smart meters and Wi-Fi, that more and more people will develop this syndrome. And currently, treatment and a diagnosis of this syndrome is problematic. It's hard to find people who treat it. There are some physicians around. In fact, Dr. Toral Jelter will be at the Moraga Q&A, and she is one of the people that treats this with regard to children, particularly and children with autism, and she's having some great success in reducing symptoms among some autistic children by essentially what she calls a calming protocol, where she reduces the background levels within the home of microwave radiation.
It's tough. Doctors and the medical professional generally don't like conditions that don't have discrete sets of symptoms.
It is problematic. It was problematic with regard to tobacco, if you go back in our history with tobacco, because there were so many different symptoms that were manifesting from tobacco users, particularly cigarette smokers, that there was a lot of denial among the medical community that it could be due to smoking. And I think we're facing a similar thing here because the low-intensity microwave radiation, particularly that which is pulsed, as in the form that wireless communication use, is having profound effects on various different organs and is contributing to a variety of different diseases.
Now, doesn't the intensity of that radiation decrease dramatically with difference? With distance, rather?
Certainly does. And so in terms of preventing the cancer risk, one thing that we've been recommending and many others have been recommending is keep the phone away from the body, away from the head. Your phone is pulsing whenever it's turned on, so you should not keep the phone in your pocket or on your body whenever the phone is powered on. We've actually seen in a couple studies following up children increased attention deficit hyperactivity from cell phone use. And in one of the studies, a study done in South Korea, they found that in the subsample of children, about a third of the children had slightly elevated lead levels in their blood. They found in that subsample a dose-response relationship between the amount of cell phone use they had and the likelihood they'd be diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity. We certainly have plenty of evidence to indicate that we need to create much more stringent regulations and we need to take precaution. Develop safer technologies.
Yeah, what would those regulations look like? You're not advocating that everyone's phones be taken away.
Absolutely not. I mean, the horse is out of the barn. Everybody's got a cell phone. Many people are dependent. Some are even addicted to these phones. We're becoming increasingly dependent upon Wi-Fi in various settings, including our home. So there's no way that this technology can be removed from society. So what we're advocating is development of more stringent regulation. There are better technologies to reduce the exposures, both in terms of the cellular towers or antennas, in terms of the devices. We can reduce our exposure to the radiation. We need to fund independent research, research that is independent of industry, because if you go see the film Mobilize, you'll see how the industry has really manipulated the scientific community by basically funding major studies. Right now, they're funding a bunch of researchers, leading researchers, on a 30-year study. And as long as the researchers don't call for precaution, they will continue to get their funding. You'll see in the film how the industry has co-opted policymakers. They've even blocked a law that Senator Mark Leno, tried to pass, and he watered it down to the point where all he wanted to say was have a single sentence to a purchaser of a new cell phone in California that would say, read the safety warnings in your manual. The industry does not want you to read the safety warnings that the FCC requires you to put in the manual. They also contribute substantial amounts of money to keep policymakers, and one of the policymakers who started making all kinds of pro-industry statements in Sacramento, it turns out he was getting much great funding for his political campaigns from industry. So I would advise, first of all, everyone to go see this movie simply because we are all affected by this kind of radiation one way or another. But also, even if you have no risk or are a complete skeptic about this, it's an interesting case study about how an industry can manipulate science, can manipulate government, can manipulate the public and the media.
The film is called Mobilize. It has its Bay Area debut this weekend. On Friday at 1 p.m., it'll be showing at the Ream Theater in Moraga. On Saturday, it'll be in San Francisco at the Castro, also at 1 p.m. There's a Q&A after each screening. We're speaking with Joel Moskowitz. He's director of the Center for Family and Community Health at UC Berkeley and co-producer of the new film, which looks at the health effects of cell phone radiation. The safety warning with one of the phones I've owned told me not to press the phone against my head, to keep it at least half an inch away at all times.
Mm-hmm. And some of them say an inch. Some of the Blackberries say adolescents and pregnant women should not keep it near their abdomen or lower abdomen.
The industry doesn't
want you to read these warnings.
I have never seen anybody suspending their mobile phone in the air on the side of their head while they're speaking into it.
Well, the FCC recently issued a clarification and a footnote for an official document saying that half inch or inch really doesn't pertain to the head. It pertains to the rest of the body, which is absurd, of course. The whole testing procedure is really a sham, and the General Accountability Office actually pointed that out. It doesn't at all resemble the typical cell phone user or the typical way that people use the cell phone.
Sure.
Sam, the specific anthropomorphic mannequin, doesn't at all resemble the typical user, and Sam's body doesn't resemble our bodies.
The biggest gap is that it's modeled on a healthy adult skull, not a child's head.
That's one of the problems, and the other problem is that we're only controlling for the heating risk, and yet all of this research that I've been talking about is based on testing levels of exposure that are below the heating level. They're not thermal risks. It has much more to do with the particular modulation, the nature of the signal, and how it's interacting with our biology. We're seeing it in many species, both in the laboratory and also in nature. There's multiple studies showing how it interferes with birds' ability to navigate, and is having a host of effects on reproduction in various species that try to reproduce near cell towers, for example. We are not the only species that we are impacting. Also, plant life as well as animal life. There's various studies showing impacts of low-intensity microwave radiation exposure. So it's interfering with biology in a very basic manner. I think, and numerous other scientists around the world think, that it's time to upgrade the classification of radio frequency energy, and definitely also extremely low frequency energy, to probably carcinogenic at the very, very least.
So here, you know, a lot of parents get their kids' cell phones because they think it's about their kids' safety. They have a way to call if they're stuck at school without a ride, or to call for help if they get into trouble. What do you think parents should be doing with regards to cell phones and their kids?
I think we've gotten along quite well without cell phones for many, many generations. And I'm not sure that the actual potential harm to children is all that much greater now than it was.
Yeah, but when I went to public school, there was a payphone in the public school, and I got sent packing with a quarter every morning. I can't remember the last time I saw a working payphone anywhere.
Yeah, and that is unfortunate. We've done away with payphones. Soon we'll do away with landlines. Soon communities will not have any input if the FCC and Tom Wheeler, who's the head of the FCC and formerly the head of the industry association I referred to earlier, get their way. They won't even be able to have any input on new cell antennas put up in front of their home based on aesthetic or other grounds. Currently, you can't question them on health grounds because it's preempted by federal legislation. Soon there will be no review process whatsoever at the local level if the FCC gets its way. And the FCC has had this revolving door with industry for decades. So the former chair is now working for some industry organization. The current chair he was the head of the CTIA. The CTIA has probably been one of the worst actors in all of this. They funded research and co-opted scientists and corrupted the science back in the 90s, and that was basically the last major research done in the U.S. The person who was in charge of the CTIA at that time was Tom Wheeler, who is now in charge of the FCC. How he got in that position? Raised a lot of money for president. So this is how the game is played. And in Washington, there's been a couple of hearings, both in the House and the Senate. The Senate hearing followed on the heels of the death of Teddy Kennedy because his friends and family thought it was his cell phone that killed him. And I think Teddy believed that, too, but did not want to go public with that. And if you listen to the hearing, it's very educational because the senators who called the hearing, Tom Harkin chaired the hearing, their questions, I think they darn well knew that they weren't going to pass any legislation. So their questions focus more around, well, what do I tell my friends and family members? What should I be doing about the cell phone? So the federal government is basically powerless in controlling this industry. Dennis Kucinich, I think the last bill he submitted in the House before he lost his seat, was a cell phone awareness bill, which would provide some funding for research and create a mechanism to review the regulations and provide for education of the public about this risk.
All right. Joe Moskowitz, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Joe Moskowitz is director of the Center for Family and Community Health at UC Berkeley, also co-producer of a new film called Mobilize, which looks at the health effects of cell phone radiation. It has its Bay Area debut this weekend. On Friday at 1 p.m., it will be at the Ream Theater in Moraga. On Saturday, it will be in San Francisco at the Castro Theater. That's also at 1 p.m. After each screening, there will be a Q&A.